All right, you got it on KHUM, and joining me via telephone this morning, we've got Johnny Steele. How you doing?
Very nice, sir. Thanks for having me.
You bet, and welcome to Humboldt County back again tomorrow. You were telling me off air that you used to come here up here to Humboldt County in the early part of your career.
Yeah, you know, I'm a part of a documentary called Three Still Standing, and it's
right.
about the San Francisco comedy boom and how it sort of petered out 15 or so years later. But when I started comedy in the mid to later 80s, it was just booming all over the state of California, Northern California.
Mm-hmm.
And there were these little road trips, and one of them was a trip where you'd come up, and I think you worked at Garberville or somebody mm-hmm. somewhere maybe.
Sure.
And then you'd do either a Ferndale and somewhere else, and then you'd do a Eureka. There was an old town, there was a place called the Eagle House. I don't know if it's still there.
Oh, yeah.
An old inn.
It's still there?
Yeah. And they had a theater in there, and you'd do like a Saturday night there, and then you'd go across that wacky highway that was beautiful but took like 16 years to get over to like Reading.
Right.
And then you'd do, you know, something over there, and then you'd go down and do Chico. And it was just like a little five-night tour. And I did it many times back in the late 80s, I think, and early 90s. And then I sort of started working more nationally with the improv chain and some other chains, and so I was more skipping across the country. And believe it or not, I do not believe I've been up there. I hate to say this, we're getting to that age where these statements are possible, but I don't think I've been up there for 20 years.
Wow.
I can't believe that. So,
wow.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to coming up and having a great time.
It should be a lot of fun. Ferndale Repertory Theater is a really wonderful spot. It's a true theater, very old space, and it should be a lot of fun. We heard that little bit that you sent us about growing up in Pittsburgh, California. I always thought that was a strange name, naming a town Pittsburgh. I was like, why would they name a town Pittsburgh since there's already a Pittsburgh that's much better well known? And even more bizarre than that,
I think there are several. There are several. If you Google Pittsburgh, yeah. United States, I think there are like about five of them. Well, Pittsburgh, California had at least a little bit of a break when they named the town. It had previously been named Las Madonas in the 1800s because it was a ranch, a horse ranch.
Uh-huh.
And then it became, if people don't know.
Well, Las Madonas, at least.
It's situated.
That sounds more like a California town, Las Madonas, than Pittsburgh.
Well, yeah. It was a Spanish, I think, Mustang ranch, actually.
Wow.
And then it was called, after that, it was called Black Diamond because the hills up there in the Pittsburgh Antioch Hills had coal in
them. Wow.
And so there were these little towns called Nortonville, I think, and Somersville, and these little tiny Welsh towns that mined coal. And so the town was called Black Diamond. And the main street of my town was called Railroad Avenue, which as a kid I thought was odd because there was no railroad on it.
Huh.
But I learned later that there was a trolley track that ran down from the coal mines to go to the river, which is Sacramento San Joaquin River, where the boats went. Ships came in and took the coal away. So this may not be very humorous to your listening audience, but it is sort of how the town evolved. And then later, they got a steel mill. And so that's why
we started with
one steel mill and then two. And at one point, they were like, when I was a kid, I was like living inside the Deer Hunter when I was a kid. And there were like seven steel mills. And so that's actually where my stage name comes from, Johnny Steeltown. I played football in college, and a coach nicknamed me Johnny Pittsburgh, Johnny Steeltown. That's what he always kept calling me, Johnny Steeltown. So my stage name became Johnny Steeltown and shortened to Johnny Steele. So it's probably far more than you wanted to know or anybody wanted to know about Pittsburgh. And I apologize to all of your listeners, but I got off on a rant there. So,
well, it's just kind of odd. I mean, I was visiting a friend in San Francisco, and he took me to a restaurant in Pittsburgh. We're going to Pittsburgh. I went, Pittsburgh? What? Pittsburgh?
Yeah, what?
What?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's like,
coming from there.
Yeah.
My whole life, if you're, you go on the road or something, or someone looks at your resume, no matter where you are, and they go, oh, I got an aunt in Philly. And you're like, yeah, wait, no, not that Pittsburgh. See, I've been explaining this ever since I was, 12 years old. No,
right.
No, not that Pittsburgh. There's another one? Yeah, another one. So it's a crazy thing. I don't know why they do. They don't do that. If you're starting a new town, anybody out there.
Are there
any new towns? I don't know. Don't
I got a great idea for a new town. We'll call it Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Or New York.
Really? I got a cousin over there in Hollywood. No, it's Los Angeles, Idaho.
Yeah, I know.
Well, there is a Moscow, Idaho. I mean, I worked Moscow. When I used to do these tours, there was another tour. You'd fly into Spokane when I was a young man. You'd do two nights in a club in Spokane. And then off you'd go on, like, Monday morning, and you'd do all these little towns. And one was Moscow, Idaho. I don't think it had a W. I don't remember. So, there are these stupid towns named after. You know, in the Bay Area, there's also a Dublin.
Yeah.
Not Irish. It's over in the East Bay, you see. And there's a Richmond, which I guess was originally Virginia. I don't know why they do these stupid
things. Is kind of odd. It really, really is. You know, it's like Ferndale. You think that this is, that's got to be there. It's only one Ferndale, for God's sake. But, you know, there's a Ferndale in Washington, up in Washington State. And I know that because I've ordered some equipment for the radio station, and it like never shows up. And I contact the vendor. What happened? They said, we send it. Here's the tracking. It went to Ferndale, Washington. I went,
yeah.
This is Ferndale, California.
I discovered that when I was Google mapping your town to sort of come up there, and then all of a sudden I looked down and said, I mean, it's going to take 32 hours to get there.
Yeah, what?
It's like, wait a minute, what? And then I found out that, yes, indeed, be sure to get off in the Eureka area and not go all the way to
Washington
State.
That's right. Yeah. It's like there's certain towns that you expect that there is a million of, like Springfield. There's a million Springfields.
Yeah.
You know, even the Simpsons made fun of that because, you know.
What we're talking about now, I teach a lot of comedy and I write and I've written for lots of other comedians, especially even including some very famous ones.
Mm-hmm.
And people say, can anybody be funny and can anybody write comedy? I mean, we're writing it here. I mean, all you have to do is sort of write down what we're talking about and then add some sort of what I call act outs where you say, I didn't know there was a Ferndale in Washington. So I just went with Google Maps. 32 hours later, honey, are we there yet? You know, that's called an act out.
Right.
I told you to look at the map there. Comedy is just really this simple. I teach a lot, and I've had everything from, a 12-year-old student up in the Marin City Arts Program to an 80-year-old woman that I taught at an elder hostel event. And not a hostel elders. I want people to be clear. It's elder
gotta be clear about that, right.
Yeah,
order matters.
Elderly folks who travel. Yeah, although some were hostile as well. That goes with the territory. But so, yeah, anyone could really write humor. I mean, you don't have to be a stand-up comic. You can be an essayist. You can be a radio guy. But it's comedy is just exaggeration. And, I was lucky enough to study at the feet of Robin Williams quite a bit. And so what he did more than most of the comics is he acted things out. A lot of when you come out and just talk right straight to the audience, you're talking as a narrator. But what I do a lot, and I sort of learned from Robin Williams, is you act things out. It's so much funnier just when you act things out. If you talk about an argument your mother and father had or something when you're young, it's probably not going to be hard. It's hard to make it funny if you just describe it in narrative. But as soon as you say, Grace, I told you to put the butter knife in the tray. Put a knife in your own damn tray. Suddenly these little act outs, these little things become hilarious when you're acting them out and playing them. It's a formula. There are people who are naturally funny to begin with, and people have some skills, gifts and whatnot, but almost anybody can learn to look into life and see some things that maybe aren't that funny and then just start exaggerating and tweaking them and make them funny.
Well, the nice thing is that life is pretty funny. I mean, there's so much humor all around us all the time. You have to point it out, as you mentioned, which is good because, we need to laugh, especially, if we're looking at politics these days, we need some big laughs.
Yeah, I mean, especially. I mean, I was writing, I hate to say it, but almost 4 years ago, I was writing for Robin Williams, and Robin was going to be going on the Letterman show right after the election. And believe it or not, back then, the GOP sort of parade was pretty crazy. If you don't remember, there was Michelle Bachmann was kind of out of her mind, and all this stuff was coming out about Herman Cain. And so I sat down with Robin and I said, "Well, let's come up with an idea." And he said, "Well, how do you see this thing?" And I said, "Well, it looks like a circus, and it's been going on for like 18 months. So why don't we come up with a thing where it's a traveling circus?" And he loved the idea. And because it's Robin, you always work with characters with him. So I said, "How about you're a barker?" And it's, "Ladies and gentlemen, step right up. It's the wackiest show on earth. Quite frightening, nevertheless." But, and so he becomes this carny barker. And then it's, "Children, step up and see Herman, insane in the brain cane, a man so crazy," And so you present this sort of 1920s, freak show, sideshow, carnival thing. And that's it. And you just take rhymes and Herman insane and the brain cane and put it in another context, a circus sideshow. And you take this thing, which is kind of depressing, even really, some of these unqualified people running for president of the most powerful nation on earth. And then you sort of ridicule them and you put it in this exaggerated form and everyone has a good time. I mean, that's for me. That's what I do most. I mean, there's many different kinds of humor. And mine tends to be, I take things, from say Def Jam humor to Rodney Dangerfield, from Garrison Keillor to Robin Williams. These are all so very different kinds of humor. It's almost like saying sports. I mean, there's no relationship between badminton and NFL football. They are all sports, though. The same is true of comics. They just really run the gamut. My favorite stuff for me, I have to be careful. But my favorite stuff is I like to take something that I think maybe people are looking at wrong or something, and then sort of turn it over. Like I used to, there was a big anti-immigration push in California like 20 years ago with this Prop 187, if you remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And the joke I did at the time was that you can't blame Mexicans. I'm going to distill it down real quickly for you here. But you can't blame Mexicans. They just want to go north where people are kind and literate and civilized and where there's education and opportunity. And they have to go through here to get to Canada. So you can't. You know, so of course I acted out. ¿Qué pasa, mijo? ¿Dónde está el norte? You know, this kind of. But you take something where these sort of people who maybe aren't the brightest people on earth, and you sort of turn the joke on them. And that's the kind of stuff that's always made me most excited on stage. If I could sort of illuminate something from a different angle,
well, life,
it's fun for me.
As we say, life can be pretty humorous as it is. I was reading an article. Someone was interviewing Carl Heisen, one of my favorite authors, and you know, he writes all these crazy stories about Florida, and they're all based on actual headlines. But what he does is he actually has to dumb them down a little bit because they're so crazy in real life, no one would believe it. So he has to actually tame them down. That's how crazy life can be.
That's a sort of brand of humor I call sort of chronicle the already absurd.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that Elvis Presley was picked by Richard Nixon to be the anti-drug czar is hilarious.
Right.
The guy died from, you know. So there's stuff that sort of, you know, that just drops into your lap sometime. It's just so many different kinds of humor. I teach a lot, and I'm probably going to do another class in a couple of weeks here in the Bay Area. And we start by just watching different kinds. And I say, what do you notice between this person and that person? You know, one person tells stories. One person comes out, and Garrison Keillor's funny. He tells stories. Rodney Dangerfield just tells jokes. You have a very distinct point of view. He's a loser.
Mm-hmm.
And it's brilliant, because even when he's making fun of someone else, this is a very key to a good comedian like he was, even when he's making someone else, or making fun of someone else, he's the victim.
Right.
He retains his point of view. So, like, for example, he's saying, I tell you, my wife can't cook. Well, you think he's going to be making fun of his wife, but he's the victim. At our house, we pray after we eat. That's the first two. I don't think meatloaf should glow in the dark. I bought her a pressure cooker. Now I've got to scrape my dinner off the ceiling. And last night she made chocolate mousse. I got an antler stuck in my throat. So she's the one he's sort of making fun of, but he remains the victim. His point of view remains clear. When I teach a lot of comics, and in my own comedy, the mistake I make a lot is my point of view changes. Audiences sit down and want a bowl of oatmeal. They want a bowl of oatmeal. They might like beef jerky, but they don't want to find a piece of beef jerky at the bottom of their oatmeal. They want a consistent. They want to know who they're going to see and what they're seeing, and that's very important in good comedians. I have made that mistake throughout my career. I'm angry. I'm happy. My material seems very progressive, and there might be a conservative joke in there. I'm loud and ranting and running around, and I might sit down and speak quietly for a while, but it's just who I am. You know, in comedy and in Los Angeles, they used to say you have to distill it down. You have to look at all the different things you are, pick the one that you want your comedy to be, and distill it down. And I've never really done that. People will see when they come out tomorrow night. There were two previous guys up there, good friends of mine, Dan St. Paul and Will Durst, and both of them very good comics and very good friends of mine. Both of those guys a little more disciplined than I and distilled. I don't really have a set routine. Robin Williams always had sort of a set routine. He sort of knew what he was going to do, but within that, he played around quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
And other comics, verbatim. They don't. I mean, if you watch Jerry, I worked with Jerry Seinfeld many years ago in Los Angeles. We were working at a club in the south of Los Angeles, down in Irvine, California. And he didn't vary one syllable. If he raised his eyebrow on a particular noun in a joke one night, he did it the same night. I tend to go in another school, like Richard Lewis and Robin Williams. These guys tend to have outlines and structures, but they tend to be more in the minute and organic and play around a little bit. I really enjoy that. It also is freeing. You know, I don't know. The way my ADD brain works, I don't know that I could deliver the exact same thing verbatim every night without going crazy. I have to be able to play and have fun. And sometimes it's great, and it's the most organic, incredible thing, and no one will ever see that show again. And sometimes it's like, what's wrong with that guy?
Yeah, plus I think it's probably more fun to change it up a little bit every night when you're doing this thing.
Yeah, and you know, if you find a better way to do so, Lenny Bruce, I was a big fan of Lenny Bruce. I read everything about him, and he just said, well, every night he would be open to the idea of changing things, and sometimes he would change them and they wouldn't end up better, and other times he would change them and they would end up better, but he was always open to the idea, of tweaking and playing. I used to do that. There was a gig. Are you ready for this? There was a gig in Vegas years ago that was three shows a night, 7 nights in a row, the Improv Comedy Club at the Riviera Casino. And I would do it about 5 times a year. It was grueling. You did an 8, 10, and midnight show every night. And so the only way I was able to keep myself from losing my brain in such an environment, because that's just grueling work. I mean, it's, you know, people think, oh, you just get up there and tell jokes. I mean, there's a lot of intensity and concentration put into a performance. If they have to go up there every 2 hours and do a 40-minute, it's just crazy. So the way I survived was every night I tried to get a couple of bits that I was working on that weren't doing well and keep tweaking and pushing them further. And then on top of that, just throw out a new bit every show. Why not? You know, you're doing 21 shows. By the end of the week, you'd end up with 15 minutes of new or better material. So a lot of comics are like, oh, you can't do that. There's, you know, 300 people in the audience every night. You can't take that chance. I'm like, I can't go up there and do the same thing every night. It'd kill me. So, yeah, so there's just different ways of it. It has hurt me a bit over the years because I was up for Letterman about 3 different times, and one of the main reasons they ended up pulling me at the last was I just didn't do my routine the exact same way. Believe it or not, Letterman wanted the exact same set. They wanted to see it 2 or 3 times exactly the same way. I just always, somehow in my messed up brain, I underestimated the power of Letterman and being on that show, and I would just, when they would come to see me at the club the next night, I would alter a few bits, and they would go, you didn't do the bit the same way. I'm like, oh, crap, sorry. So it has hurt me in ways, and other ways, it's helped because I became good friends with Robin Williams, probably because we had similar styles of humor, and that was a wonderful experience. I was able to bike ride with him over the years. Robin is a bicycling enthusiast, and he lives over in Tiburon. He lived over in Tiburon, and I live in Berkeley, so I was able to bicycle ride with him many times. I actually think I took the last bike ride he took, which is about a week before he passed.
Wow.
So he was a great guy, and I really liked that brand of freeform silly humor.
Yeah, he was absolutely wonderful, one of my all-time favorites. So before we're pretty much out of time, but before we duck out of here, what can folks expect to tomorrow night on your show? Is there certain things that you're touching on with your humor right now?
As I was just saying a minute ago, I will sit down today and start drafting out exactly what I feel like, an outline for tomorrow night. It's about absurdity. It's both internal and external. By that, I mean, there's a little bit about what makes me crazy in my life and what I can't get going. A little bit about my growing up and my crazy family. There'll be some observations on the passing parade. It's just sort of me trying to find, like we talked about earlier, using comedy as therapy and trying to find peace in a world where, you know, one political party is tearing at each other's throats, and then the other political party has elected a guy who has absolutely no experience in the world. How do you get up in the morning and read the paper and see that and not have to either go to a therapist or at least get on stage, in my case, and tell people? So that's what it's about. It's sort of therapy. It's my therapeutic sort of look at a life gone crazy.
Fantastic. Well, we are out of time. I've got some tickets to give out in a little bit to get you into your show. And Johnny, thank you again so much for taking the time this morning to talk with us. Really appreciate that.
And thank you very much. I love radio. Radio is my first love, actually. I studied in college, and I had a radio show in San Francisco for years back in the... Yeah, and I just love radio. That is my... Being able to just chat, as opposed to having to have a tightened routine, it's just refreshing, meeting new people, and it's just, that's my favorite. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. And in case you're wondering what the stand-up routine of Johnny Steele sounds like, listen up.
This Saturday night, May 14th, at the Ferndale Repertory Theater, experience the blue-collar progressive humor of Johnny Steele.
I grew up in a good mill town, with a lot of violence and ignorance and stupid, uneducated people. Little town of Pittsburgh, California. Yeah, we got a new town here, and we're going to give it a name. What kind of name you want? A name that sort of embodies alcoholism, poverty, stupidity. How about Pittsburgh? There you go, my friend. Yes, sirree. What are they, on heroin? You don't name your town Pittsburgh after you saw the other Pittsburgh. It's like having a kid in 1948 and naming him Adolf. Yeah, Adolf, that's good. I really enjoyed the work of the other Adolf.
Don't miss this hysterically funny comic, Johnny Steele, winner of the San Francisco International Comedy Competition, in this one-night-only show. Tickets are $16 in advance, $18 at the door, if there are any left the day of the show. You can get them at ferndalerep.org or by calling 786-LIVE.